This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
We are back here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. We're live here inside the web studio. Ira's in the MDN studios, and the MGO Blog Roundtable crew is with us. 1 week hiatus. Hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving. How are you this morning, Brian, Seth, and Craig?
I'm well.
I'm struggling with another Lions loss, but I feel like the team's going to come back as soon as they get their coach.
Craig?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Flying back to Ann Arbor tonight. I'm taking the red eye, but it's been beautiful here and in Hawaii, so I appreciate the opportunity to get into the warm weather.
Gotcha, man. What time is it in Hawaii right now?
It is 4:07 a.m.
Freaking grief, Craig. Hey, well, we appreciate you getting up this morning to talk. Yeah. To talk some Michigan football, of course, with us as they have, they announced yesterday they canceled the Maryland game. Automatically, I don't know what you guys' experience was, but my timeline has been flooded by Buckeyes for days now, saying that Michigan was out to sabotage Ohio State with this. Kirk Herbstreit seemingly picking up on that theme, went on national television to offer that. You know, offer that take up, that conspiracy theory up, ultimately went ahead and apologized for it. But that didn't stop Ward Manuel from responding to it yesterday. I wonder what you guys make of all of that.
Well, Michigan isn't going to dodge Ohio State. It's just not something that a professional athletic department does, a professional athletic director, head football coach, who would rather eat grape nuts, the worst breakfast cereal, instead of dodge an opportunity to compete.
You know, my brother Roger loves grape nuts and eats them with water. His comment is,
I put grape in the yogurt.
Yeah, there you go. Different. Makes its own gravy is what he's.
Oh my God.
So I don't know. There's no conspiracy I don't believe in. And so. I think that, yes, Michigan is dodging Ohio State, and more power to them, and the hell with Ohio State if that's what they think, whatever. I mean, I don't care. I mean, the Michigan fans really want to go down to Columbus and play with Dan Villari starting his first game and no backup quarterback, because I think from what I saw of Joe Milton, especially the last pass, which was a grounder, that he's hurt. And it's obvious that Cade McNamara is hurt, probably hurt coming into the game, certainly hurt halfway through the game. And so I don't know, to some extent, why go through that? But do I think that this is a fake somehow just to screw Ohio State? Well, actually, I think Ohio State canceled the game themselves this year, last time I checked, when they had the same problems. And if they hadn't canceled the game themselves with their own problems, and here's the other thing. Who's Ohio State going to play now? I mean, don't they have this crossover game?
Wisconsin.
They're going to play Wisconsin. And so no one's going to pay any attention to Indiana and,
Northwestern.
And Northwestern anyway. They're going to pay attention to Wisconsin and Ohio State. And if Ohio State cranks them, which they may well, they're going to end up in the national championship series anyway. So I don't see all the hoo-ha about this, you know, being worth a hill of beans or have any real meaning.
Here's where I'm at. Like, I think when somebody says when someone believes in a conspiracy like that, they're telling on themselves. They're telling you like the kind of way that they think. So if somebody thinks that Michigan, a program that like is trying to get their kids to the NFL, is trying to get their kids seen, is going to pass up an opportunity to play Ohio State and also cancel the Maryland game just to like screw with Ohio State's possible chances of getting into the playoffs. That's telling me that they're thinking that more important than COVID is screwing over your rivals. And to a Michigan fan, that's insane. But if an Ohio State fan actually thinks that, they're actually telling you right there that they think that COVID's not important and that the only reason anyone would cancel one of these games, or at least that they would care more about canceling an opponent just to screw with them. They think our hate runs that deep. And that just scares me because that means their hate runs that deep.
Oh, well, look, there are a lot of people that believe that COVID is over. I think we can... You can get on Twitter and see that that's chaotic. I don't think that is that surprising that we would find that. And if you have, I mean, you have some Michigan fans believing in the conspiracy too, for that matter, Seth. I mean, before I got, you know, responses from Ohio State fans about it, I was getting responses from Michigan fans like, oh man, they're doing what they need to do. It's like, let me tell you, as much as I understand the sentiment of not wanting to play the rest of the season, and I agree in a trivial sense, talking about just the competitive side of this, it makes sense to not play that game. Because I agree with you, Craig. I think that if Michigan winds up playing that game against Ohio State, I think there's a good chance that Dan Vallari is the quarterback. I think that if you heard them talk about Joe Milton being hurt too, there was some question as to whether or not he was even going to suit up for that game. Against who did they just play?
And Penn State.
Yeah, there was some question of whether he was going to suit up for that game. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how things go over the next week. But I'm not going into in Ohio State week thinking that, knowing for sure that, hey, man, either of the two starting quarterbacks are going to be available for that contest. They might be in a situation where Dan Vallari is the only guy they have available for that game.
And Hassan Haskins is the backup. Running Wildcats, and he can throw the ball a little bit. So, I mean, that's what it would look like. Yeah, I mean, that's a game that Ohio State really wants to play, but whatever. I mean, to be honest, I don't think it means a hoot for Ohio State, because I think they're going to play Wisconsin anyway. I think they're going to beat Wisconsin anyway. And I think they're going to be in the national champion series, whatever you call it, anyway. And so, to them, this really has no meaning.
And Barry Alvarez is already taking the stand and saying, hey, you know, Ohio State should play, even if they only get four games in. We didn't really make this rule to, like, keep Ohio State out of the Big Ten championship. We made this rule to make sure that, like, a 4-0 Michigan didn't get in if they didn't play Ohio State. That's why we have the rule.
Yeah, I think Indiana may not like that very much, but you know, we'll see what happens there. Is the Michigan State Ohio State going this weekend? You know, I mean, that one wasn't 100% last I heard.
Ohio State is saying they can practice for a day and they can play Michigan State. They aren't going to miss another game unless the Big Ten were to come down as a matter of, you know, a violation of one of the benchmarks you have to meet as far as player availability. That's the only way they would not play that game. They wouldn't, you know, self-select out of an abundance of caution. There's no way. They're going to play that game. They're going to put themselves behind the eight ball even more. So I expect them to play the game against State. Okay. We'll see. But, guys, you know, a bigger picture. Wait, before we move on to that, what did you make of Kirk Herbstreit's apology? I got a call before you guys came on saying, hey, look, we need to just accept the man's apology. No need to shoot back at him. What say you?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay.
Well, I watched it. I did watch it. And on the one hand, it seemed sincere. I mean, it seemed like he really thought, I mean, an apology, when the apology starts, I'm really sorry if I offended anyone, or to all those people then the apology is BS. But in this case, there was none of that. It was, I was a complete butthead. And I shouldn't have said those things. And it did seem sincere.
Did he actually call himself a butthead?
Pretty much. I mean,
watch it.
Yeah. I mean, and he really does seem contrite. However, this isn't the first time Herbstreit has done this to Michigan, for example. I mean, he was the one who came out with, less miles to Michigan. That's a done deal, right? I mean, he then apologized, saying he would never get into that sort of business again. Well, here he is again, back into that sort of business, sort of straying away from football games and into the externalities of Michigan, Ohio State. So on the one hand, I've never had a thing for Herb Street. I've never found him to be offensive or anything of the sort, but it was, you know, and his apology did seem contrite. On the other hand, I don't know, man. This isn't your first sort of rodeo with this sort of thing. But I don't know. What did you think, Sam?
I mean, I think what is I'm sorry supposed to get you? Yeah. Man, I didn't hear, as I said before, I didn't hear Michigan calling for his job. I didn't hear Ward Manuel say he's fired.
No.
I don't think that I'm sorry, you know, I don't think that it necessarily or it should mean that you don't get a terse response. That, hey, man, okay, you're sorry, but, you know, this is what I think of what you said. You're a fool for saying it. That's to me something that fits the statement, the absurdity of what he had to say. And I might agree with anyone that feels like you're going too far with your response. That they got, if he got on there and said the man should not be working for ESPN. He should not be working in the capacity of a Michigan Ohio State game and commentary. If he had done that, that would be too far. But I think calling him out for doing this again, to your point, Craig, highlights the fact that there is a bias. As much as he tries to act like there isn't and tries to say that he is down the line and impartial, there is absolutely a bias there. And it has come out into very, very visible circumstances in ways that can harm Michigan. And I don't think that's a coincidence. And I think that's worthy of being called out. Just my opinion.
Well, I think it's worthy of being called out, for sure. The question is, was he sincere in his apology and did he really regret it? Probably is my guess. I mean, but still, it's irritating. It's irritating. And I could understand why an Ohio State person would be irritated if, Desmond Howard, for example, did something like that vis-a-vis Ohio State. They would be all crazy about it. But That's not happened. So,
they're crazy about Kirk Herbstreit, who had to move to Nashville
because
he wasn't
true.
Sufficiently OSU no. homery enough for their tastes.
Yeah,
UNON on the fan base, people.
Yeah. Incidentally, Seth, are you going to sing the Lion Song for us?
I know all the lyrics. I am a huge. No, Lion, no one's going to no. doubt my Lions fandom. No. Everyone knows that I am a Lions first. No. And everything else second. And my Lions need to go out and get the coach that's going to finally get them over the hump, and that's Jim Harbaugh.
Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, he'd be really good too, but I think Jim Harbaugh is the answer. They really need to go out and get Jim. Just make it happen, Lions.
Eric Bieniemy is not taking them.
Screw you, Brian Cook.
What?
Give me my Eric Bieniemy, man.
He's not taking the Lions job. Is
Why
he taking
not?
The Jets job? Because he can have any job he wants.
Lions? Why?
So, you know, when Harbaugh was at San Francisco, people got tired of him because San Francisco, the Niners have a legacy. And so people are like, I'm not going to put up with this stuff. But he could have stayed at Stanford forever because those guys were nothing. Those guys were a loser. So what does Jim Harbaugh need to have success? He needs to take over the most sad sack bunch of ne'er-do-wells that ever did ne'er-do-well, and that's the Detroit Lions.
I don't know. I think the Jets are more pathetic than the Lions. Plus, the Jets are going to have Trevor coming in, right?
One playoff win since 1957, Craig.
The Lions just need the right guy.
I've been lobbying for John Harbaugh for years, for as much good as it's done. So you're telling me I can't have John Harbaugh, but I can have a Harbaugh coach in the Lions, is what you guys are saying.
Yeah. He doesn't have to move. He doesn't have to like upend his life. He can just rescue a beloved Southeast Michigan institution that's a better fit.
So tell me this and ponder this. We still have some time before the break, and I imagine this will carry a good portion of the show. Mm-hmm. I'm asking you guys what you want to happen. But what do you think will happen? Understanding that there has been this narrative about the uncertainty of Harbaugh's tenure in Ann Arbor has been a narrative that has been growing in intensity all season. I mean, it was there before the season because the extension had been signed, but you know, as you guys know, the explanation that was given was that COVID hit. As the season has progressed though, and Michigan has lost games, and you know, from Michigan State on, the intensity of that narrative has built to the point where in the Penn State game, and I guess I didn't literally sit and count how many times Mike Golic talked about Harbaugh going to the NFL, but it was, when he wasn't talking about a play on the field, he was talking about Harbaugh might be going to the pros. I mean, it was like, this was what the game was about. So it is fever pitch now, this thing, to the point where if you're Michigan, if Harbaugh is your guy, I feel like you got to say it now. You got to reaffirm it so you can give him the best possible chance of retaining this recruiting class in its entirety. That has not been done yet. What do you got? Do you read anything into that? What do you think the future holds for Jim here?
I mean, Ward Manuel hasn't had to make a decision of this level. So I don't know if there's really a way to predict. I mean, I know what I expect. I expect Michigan to sign him to a cosmetic extension with a reduced buyout and bring him back. Nick can point to all the injuries at quarterback, on the offensive line, the opt-outs. Like, there's enough of a cover, I guess, where you say just kind of write this off as a COVID or bring him back next year. And then, I mean, they'll probably be okay. They're going to have more talent than everybody on their schedule except a couple teams. And then they'll get clonked by Ohio State again. But because they went 8-4 instead of 2-4, that they'll be like, oh, yeah, we improved. And then he'll be back for 8, near 9. And then at that point, he might get the axe. But I think there's probably at least one more of Harbaugh.
Seth?
When a Detroit Metro team needs him most, a Harbaugh appears. And there is an opportunity here for the Lions. With Harbaugh not doing so well, he's having a bad COVID season. But that's not his fault, and we all know it. And the Lions really could go out and get the guy who's going to change this entire franchise around right now. If the Lions don't take this opportunity, which, as a huge Lions fan, of course, it's all I care about, I think Michigan's going to, as Brian says, kind of sign him to a little contract, and they're going to recruit with the same thing hanging over their head that they're recruiting with now. I don't think that this recruiting class is necessarily worth going through that, but I think that that's where their decision process is, so that's where they're at. I just think they have to make a decision.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, I don't think you let the tail wag the dog like that. I mean, you make the decision on Harbaugh, not because of the recruiting class. But if you decide, if you're thinking that he's the guy, then you say that now so he can preserve his recruiting class. I don't think you side him because of recruiting class. I guess is the distinction that I'm making here, Craig. What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, I would be pretty surprised if Jim Harbaugh is not the coach for Michigan next year. I mean, the optics of it and the dollars of it aren't great, because I know there's almost no one in the fan base who isn't sort of done, who hasn't reached the point of saying this isn't working. In fact, no one that I've talked to or read on your board, Sam, or on Brian's. But you're facing a $10 million buyout for her, probably a couple more million for his assistant coaches. And then, I mean, Mel Tucker got $5 million. So my guess is they're looking at another $7 million. So you're talking $20 million bucks off the top to hire a coach next year, in a year when Michigan has bled maybe maybe $70 million worth of red ink. I mean, that one just doesn't feel very likely to me. Now, I have friends who tell me, oh, yeah, some donor will step up and pay the $20 million. Really? I'm not so sure. I'm not sure anyone stepped up and paid the $7 million when they hired Harbaugh. I think that was paid for out of the athletic director, out of the AD funds. And I don't think someone's going to step up for 10 or 15 or whatever to get rid of Jim Harbaugh. Now, it's true that a transition over to the Lions or the Jets would be a kind of a win-win, maybe, but I don't see Harbaugh feeling comfortable with that. I mean, it's fine to leave Stanford when you took that program and turned it around. It's fine to leave San Francisco when you were a marked success there. It's another thing to leave your alma mater when the perception is it's been, you know, a bust, or maybe not quite a bust, but not what everyone well below expectations, and maybe expectations were too high. So I don't see Harbaugh wanting to do that. I think he'll want to dig his heels in and say, no, I can win here. And I don't see the athletic department wanting to bleed out $20 million extra next year, given the current situations. So I don't see there's much choice. I think the choice is no, we're going to play it out. And what Ward Manuel should do, in my opinion, and he should have done it already probably, is announce Harbaugh's our coach next year. You know, we have a handshake deal for an extension, and you know, we'll get into the details of it later. But he's our coach next year, and he's our coach into the first. And that's what he should be doing. And the fact that he hasn't gives me some pause, because I don't think he's an unsophisticated guy by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. I said before that earlier in the show and earlier in the week that if they get through the early signing period without addressing publicly, because I think the intensity of this thing almost demands a response. I can only imagine what the storyline would be in an Ohio State game, especially if it got out of hand. I mean, the whole thing would be a PSA for talking and poaching Michigan's recruits. So yeah. it really demands a response if he's your guy. And so I don't know what other conclusion you can draw from silence into the early signing period. Any conclusion other than that maybe he isn't. He must not be certain of Jim being here in the future. Everything that I heard heading into last weekend said that he was still feeling that way. So, certainly keeping the ear to the ground this week to see if there's any change along those lines. But assuming that there isn't, I mean, it really, the worst way for this to play out is coming to this conclusion in January and them having lost a recruit or two, a significant recruit or two, during the early signing period.
I mean, I don't know if announcing that Harbaugh's back for next year is going to do a whole lot more. You know, these recruits aren't stupid. They know that Harbaugh might get extended, but like he emphatically be on the hot seat next year he's back. So like it might be better just to rip the Band-Aid off from the perspective. I kind of disagree with Craig about the money, just because, you know, Michigan's in a tough spot, but they know that once this COVID vaccine hits next year, they're going to be back to normal, and they have a very consistent, repeatable revenue stream down the road that they can borrow. And interest rates are essentially nil. Yeah. So I think that's something that you could get over the hurdle for if you really believed in Matt Campbell.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, I guess, Brian. I mean, money is free right now. And when money is free, it's a good time to leverage the future. And you're right, at some point in time, fans will return, revenue streams will start to reappear. I'm not so sure it's going to be 2021, because the vaccine is still problematic in at least one sense, and that's how much immunity does it create? And in other words, it might create immunity for 4 months, 6 months, but it might not be any better than the flu vaccine. And if that's the case, you're looking at fans who are saying, do I want to go out and sit in the cold next to a bunch of other people who may have been vaccinated and may not have been vaccinated? I think this is not a necessarily a 2021 solution. I think you're looking to 2022, 2023. But yeah, can you leverage that future right now with free money? Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to be convinced that Matt Campbell was your guy. And, taking Iowa State to its first Big 12 title game, everybody seems to like him. He's 41. He's established a level of success at Iowa State that they haven't had in a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that you could make the argument that if you sat down with this guy and he seemed like a real good, that it would be worth the
money. I assume Texas is coming after him too, right?
Texas seems focused on Urban Meyer. Yeah. Because apparently protecting an abuser on your staff for years and years isn't disqualifying.
Wow.
I got a feeling that's not going to happen, by the way.
I can't see it either. But who knows? Who knows?
All right, we need to get to a break. We'll pick this up on the other side. We'll get into some basketball and hockey here as well. And we'll go blog roundtable on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTA. Take it.
I mean, how many people are maybe Ira knows are going to be out for the Minnesota series and hockey next
five
week.
Michigan guys. It's three or four Minnesota guys, but it's five Michigan guys.
Because they're going to miss Ben Yeres.
I'd have to go back. I thought it was at York.
Bordello, another one.
Yeah, three of the bees.
Yeah, I have to go back and actually look.
Beecher, Bordello,
Beniers, and
Beecher, I think.
Beecher, yeah. Beecher, yeah.
That's a lot of firepower that's gone. I don't know what Minnesota.
Well, not to mention this thing's going to be a COVID hotbed, and they're all going to get sick afterwards.
Mm, yeah.
Sorry, Sam. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
that was the other one. I forgot he was there.
Michigan just needs to talk to the Lions. I know we're still live, everybody. Talk to the Lions. They get you out of this either way. Because if the Lions will just pretend to talk. If Harbaugh's your guy, have them talk to Harbaugh. And then have Harbaugh say, nope, he's our guy. Or Michigan say, nope, he's our guy. We took him back from the NFL again. And if he isn't, he gets you out of this.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if the demand is what Mike Golick said it was. I mean, he made it sound like Harbaugh would be at or near the top of several team boards.
Of course he is. It's the NFL. There's nothing that gets ruined in the NFL.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, of course, he's a domer. It was like, man, you are really hitting on this like over and over again. I think we got it the first five times you said it.
So, well, I mean, you have to believe that the Jets would perceive him as preferable to Adam Gase at this point. I mean, that doesn't mean that the Jets might not want someone else. On the other hand, the Jets are going to have Trevor coming in, and they might think somehow, well, look what Harbaugh did with Luck. Look what Harbaugh, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's a quarterback guy. I don't know.
There was a full article, and not that it matters, a full column in the New York Post, a full page, a whole column, a guy wrote about how it was time for Harbaugh to go to the Jets.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Pure speculation, but it was.
My daughter's costume is not as comfortable as it looks.
It actually did not look comfortable.
Man, it's going to be interesting if they play that Ohio State game.
Well, I
guess it's not going to be pretty anyway, but it's going to be even uglier.
They'll literally hang 100 on us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not impossible. It's not impossible that they could do that. And I don't see Harbaugh wanting to dump that game. I don't, it doesn't feel like what he's like.
Yeah. And, I didn't really get to respond to the Herb Street thing that, like, if I'm Quiddy Pay, I'm really pissed because that's telling, you know, it already hurts enough that you're going to be missing this game that you thought about playing your whole life. And then this guy's coming in and saying that you're waving the white flag because you can't play it like that. If I'm on the team or I'm the coaches or whatever, that then I'm offended as a fan. That's, you know, we've been making the same joke a gazillion times. What bothers me is that he's not taking COVID seriously. And he's got a huge platform of people who need to hear something from the people they respect because they don't respect people like me. You know, they need to hear from somebody who's going to, who can change their minds and actually have something to say about it. He affected them when he talked about Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And they listened to him. And they're going to listen to him on COVID. And when he's making light of it or saying that a program cares more about hurting their rival than being safe about this disease, he's taking this disease not seriously. And that's not what we need out there out of the people who are on media.
My brother was picketed this last week. He had 40 people on his front lawn yelling and yammering at him, I think on Thanksgiving Day, because the Board of Health in Lucas County closed down sports. And so it was a not ugly scene, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
Back on radio in about 45 seconds, guys.
Gotcha.
You should see the Farmington Hills School Board right now.
Oh, is that right? What's going on there?
Remember, we were live on public or television.
What did you guys get to talking about while I was
I was COVID, talking up, I was talking about my brother who's in charge of the chair of the Lucas County Board of Health in Toledo. No, that's the other brother. He was picketed by about 40 people on Thanksgiving Day on his lawn holding signs up. And so he went out and talked to them for a while about you know, why, what the board did and why they did it. So
here we go, guys. Work? Stand by for radio.
Yeah, sort of.
Really?
Surprisingly.
In Ohio, no less. That's the main.
All right, guys, stand by. Coming back on radio in 5, 4, 3.
I can't see it either. But who knows? Who knows?
All right, we need to get to a break. We'll pick this up on the other side. We'll get into some basketball and hockey here as well. And we'll go blog roundtable on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. Take it. Here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side. And, of course, the MCO Block Roundtable. Got Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, Craig Ross back with us. And guys, let's shift gears and talk about a couple of other sports that are playing. They played last night, as a matter of fact. Starting off first with the Michigan basketball team, now 3-0 on the young season. You know, they started out the year Bowling Green, you know, impressive showing offensively. I know that there were some struggles for Franz Wagner in that game and the game against Oakland where they struggled as a team and actually went to overtime. But then in last night's game against a MAC opponent in Ball State, they handled them like you would want and expect. Curious your takes respectively on the hardwood Wolverines to this point. Let's start with you, Craig.
Well, I thought the BGSU win was fairly impressive because Bowling Green is a good team. They have three guys who could play at the Big Ten level at least. One guy who's a borderline NBA guy, that guy Turner. And they shot it like crazy in the last 6 or 7 minutes. Everything they threw up from anywhere, whether, you know, check stuff went in. And so I thought for an opening game, that was a pretty impressive performance. Oakland was a debacle. Oakland is probably, you know, their coach a good coach and a good person, Greg Campy. It was asked what his team was going to do this year. And he goes, well, I know one thing, we'll be 0-7. And he doesn't have a lot, and they had COVID problems and roster problems. And so for that game to go into overtime was not great. Michigan had 15 turnovers in the first half. They didn't seem to really know how to attack a 1-3-1 zone. They tried to attack it from the top, which is hopeless. When in the second half, they did adjust and attack it from the wings down to the low post, which is how you beat it. It's why you may remember when Beilein was running the 1-3-1, Michigan was playing against Marquette, I think in Madison Square Garden, and Buzz Williams was the coach at Marquette, and he just shredded the 1-3-1. It went from wing to post to backside, bang, layup. It was a layup drill. And then the next night we played Alabama, and the Alabama did the same thing. And that was the end of the 1-3-1 in John Beilein, for Beilein's purposes. And so for some reason we didn't do that until later on, late in the game. Maybe it surprised us because I haven't seen Oakland, and I'm not sure what they run as a matter of course. But the turnovers in that game were depressing. They played, I thought, pretty well against Ball State. Ball State is a team that's going to be at the top along with BGSU of the MAC, and they're a good, solid mid-major team. And I thought Michigan played reasonably well. They shot it well, and turnovers are still too high, 13, but from my point of view. But everything else looks pretty good. For me, I don't think Michigan is as good a team as Michigan State or Illinois. I think those two teams are more talented teams right now, and I think they're going to have a hard time beating those teams. But I've seen just about everybody else, at least for half of a game, or I saw even some Northwestern yesterday. And I think Michigan can compete or beat any of the rest of those teams. They have the ability to do that. They have the coaching and the players to do that. But you have some questions, I mean. Yeah. And the questions, I think, are primarily on defense, particularly when you've got Mike Smith and Austin Davis in the game. Neither one of those guys is particularly good defenders. And that, you know, makes it difficult. That's my broad overview. I think they'll be a good offense, but I'm not sure how good they're going to defend. Their best defender is Sean D.
Yeah. Sean Brown. Brian?
Well, I mean, if you look at the last two games, the story is with Dickens. Yeah. So they're like plus eight with Dickinson on the floor and the open off of it. They're like plus four against Ball State with Dickens, Austin Davis on the floor, and they're like plus 14 with Dickens. So it's time for him to start and get as many minutes as and then Austin Davis should go back to the role he had last year. He's going up against backup bigs, maybe aren't that great in the middle of halves and able to like fill it up from the post. And then you're hoping that you get Brandon Johns in there for 10 minutes, a small ball center. But the with and without Dickens is pretty much the story.
Yeah, just to expand on Brian, with Brian saying, like, I'm okay with the idea of not starting Dickinson, just because, like, as soon as they put him in after the first break against, like, the second team center of the other guys, because everyone's got to play two centers, it's such a mismatch that Michigan goes on a run. And they've had that every single time they stick in Dickinson. They go on like a, they're up by 10 as soon as that whole shift is over, because he's just dominating whoever that second guy is. I think that, I don't know when they do it, but eventually Brandon Johns is probably better than Austin Davis if you want to start somebody to get a different look. Austin Davis also has an incredibly high turnover rate this year, and you add that on top of his defense, and it's it just gets them into, you know, ugly situations that you don't necessarily have to be in. Johns is pretty switchable. There aren't a whole lot of dominant centers in the league this year, other than, like, you know, Illinois. And you can get away, I think, with the Johns if you want to have those minutes go somewhere. I know Austin Davis is a senior, but I agree with Brian that, like, he's going to have to be the, you know, the junk ball role and not a starter this year, because you got something in Dickinson. And who starts and who doesn't, I don't really care. I think Sean D is not a starter officially either, but, you know, I would consider him, you know, one of the main guys. But and then the other thing is the turnovers. Eli has not really seen the court well. I think that zone, Oakland kind of planned that. I think if they were going to have one shot at a good game this year, they were like, okay, the Michigan game. And this early in the season with a young team, like, they're just not practiced at it, right? They only had a couple of sets that they could run against zone because they weren't expecting it, and Oakland's normally a man team. So when a team changes up who they are, just that, just to get you, you know, you get run into a little trouble. And I think Sean D was, what, 1 for 10 on his three-pointers?
Exactly.
Like, if he's 2 for 10, that doesn't go to overtime. If he's 4 for 10, then we're not even talking.
Yeah, I look at that game. I said this the other day. Hunter Dickinson should have had 30 against Oakland. I felt like they settled for too many threes. I think their reaction to the zone often and trying to beat it down the floor contributed to the recklessness, the looseness with the basketball. And in the half court, I thought they settled for too many threes. It was when they discovered that, wait a minute, we get it down to Big Hunter. Not only can he go to work and score himself, but his ability, his passing ability, guys, the way you talk about seeing the floor, he sees the floor well, I mean, certainly for a big man, but I just think he sees the floor well for any guy, anyone on the basketball court. Just seems really adept at delivering the ball in places where guys can do something with it, feeling double teams. You know, yesterday he had a nice back to the basket move and stepped through a double team. He's just a high IQ basketball player, and I agree that you got to. I think you start him. You start him. You maximize his minutes, and ultimately, between the matchup that you talked about, Brian, the better matchup, and just being used to maybe a 12 to 15 minute role off the bench, you bring energy and physicality off the bench. That's something that, you know, Austin Davis can bring to the table already.
Yeah, I mean, I do wish that Colin Castleton was still on the, who started for Florida yesterday, and it's just like, that would have been nice. But, you know, I can't please everybody with playing time, so it's a tough balancing act. But yeah, I mean, this team doesn't seem like it's entitled, should be in the range where they're comfortable in the tournament. You know, the problem with the Big Ten is that I think there's like 10 top 30 teams in KenPom in this league, so like last year, someone's going to get squeezed out because they have a lot of close games. Hopefully not going to be Michigan, but
there's really no bad team in the conference from what I've seen.
There's two bad teams.
I don't think Northwestern is a bad team. I watched them
play Pine Bluff last night like a sicko, and they were tied 10 minutes into this game, and Pine Bluff is putting like micro machines out there. They had the lollipop guild at guard. They're not a good team.
I'm not convinced Northwestern's a bad team. I'm not saying they're a great team or even maybe a good team, but I don't think they're a walkover. They do some things well. They will shoot the ball pretty well. Miller Kopp can shoot it. They have this guy who I hadn't seen until last night who came in from William & Mary who looks like he's pretty good, a DJ or something like that. You know, they're not, you know, you're right. I mean, Penn State and Nebraska and Northwestern aren't great teams, and they're teams that Michigan should beat, but they're not walkovers. I mean, they're the sort of teams that will win some games, and the rest of the conference is all about the same. They're all about at the same ability, except for Penn State and Illinois, who I think are a little bit better than us. But an NCAA tournament is well within reach of that's for sure. A Big Ten championship, I'm a little skeptical right now, at least. I don't think there's enough offense. They have enough.
We haven't. I want to make sure that we get some hockey talk in before we get out of here. Team that to start the season just an offensive explosion, just wizardry by an outstanding freshman class, looking every bit like this all-time great recruiting class that you guys were talking it up as. Run into a Notre Dame team that, you know, shut all that down for a couple of games. They weren't going to go undefeated, though. I was talking to Mel about that yesterday. They took the 7-hour bus ride to Happy Valley, and they got back to scoring again. I'm curious what you guys make of the start for the Michigan hockey team.
Well, and they're having a little bit of an issue against bigger and older. Notre Dame played that game in the neutral and on the boards, and they don't have a Zach Hyman type who's going to walk off the wall with the puck and then happen. They're just not big enough and strong enough yet. You know, Kent Johnson, when he's open ice, is an electric player. But Michigan probably won 30-40% of those board battles, so you're always kind of operating from behind. But then also, if you look at the goals Notre Dame is scoring in a series, like the winner, well, I guess it wasn't technical, but the winner on Saturday deflects off a stick and breaks the top corner. And that's there were two just kind of shots from the outside that looked pretty harmless against Straussman that go in on Friday. And that's just something, sometimes that happens against Notre Dame, which may be the best defensive, where you get a bad bounce and then they lock you down and it's very, very difficult to find scoring chance. So, you know, I felt like that was a pretty even series and Michigan should improve faster than Notre Dame because they're younger. And then last night's Penn State game, 3-1 final, you know, 2-1 before an empty netter, a little bit deceptive on the shot totals because Penn State just throws it on net from the zone. They outshot Wisconsin something like 42-15 and lost 6-3. So you can't just go by the shot totals because they're just looking to break the idea that Corsi is full metric. But I'm impressed by the paucity of chances that Michigan gives up. They gave up 38 shots to Penn State, but there was like three actual chances. There's, you know, a defensive zone turnover here or there. Owen Power had a bad one, but their ability to reduce the number of odd man rushes despite playing a really clean game is impressive this early. And, you know, that Garrett Van Wy, Dakota Raby, Nolan Moyle line is flying around the ice despite being heavily set of forwards. So I expect that they should probably win again tonight. Then the Minnesota series is going to be, I mean, they're going to be missing five players for them. Minnesota is going to be missing three because the World Juniors kind of pulled a whoopsie on them. That's going to be a situation where I don't know how much we're going to learn about what the full strength version of team looks like. But the good thing for Michigan is that they do have some depth. LaPointe, Grohl have barely played, and those guys were both solid junior players last year to step in and help. So good start. Hopefully they are able to finish off this first half at like 7-3. That'd be nice.
At what point do you guys think we'll see Eric Portillo?
Second half of the season. I don't know if you can play him tonight. You're not going to play him against Minnesota because you're down five players already. So you really need your established top end goalie to hopefully bail you out of that. So it's going to be tonight or the second half of the.
Yeah, I think that they're a little ahead of where I thought they would be. I mean, at this point in time of the season, Notre Dame is maddening. I mean, Jeff Jackson's a great coach, obviously, and they play a defensive style. But I don't know. You guys don't. Sam might remember. Maybe not. Back when there was no shot clock in basketball, and okay, you don't remember that. There was a time.
Sam's grandpa remembers that.
Okay, I'm old enough to be Sam's grandpa, but there was a time when there was no shot clock in college basketball, and these games could be brutal. because what would happen is a team would get ahead 4-0 and decide, eh, we're just not going to attack the basket. We're just going to stand around for the next 20 minutes. And that literally happened. It happened to Michigan in the NCAA tournament one year where the Villanova, who I think won the tournament, got ahead and early in the game down in Dayton and just decided, yeah, we're probably not as good as they are. So we're just not going to attack the basket. We're just going to stand around until we get fouled. And that happened over and over. Well, that's what playing Notre Dame is, because they come in hockey. They come out and they play this trapping defense. They're good at it. I mean, they're great at it. And then they're going to mash you along the boards, and there's almost no skating in the game. And if I wasn't king of the world, I'd try to figure out some way to take that out of hockey, because there's nothing more boring than trapping, smashing along the boards hockey. And it's certainly one not suited to this particular Michigan team, who's a great skating team that's pretty highly skilled. And they're fun to watch. And the game against Penn State last night was a lot more fun, win or lose, than what the Notre Dame game looked like, you know.
I mean, every Michigan fan remembers Ron Mason, Michigan State. Oh, and every Red Wings fan remembers, you know, playing New Jersey, right? Yeah. So we all know the left wing lock. We all know how that works. The whole idea is if they're bigger than you, they're going to lock you out. They're going to force you to dump it down, and then they can win against the boards. The answer to that is get through the neutral zone with speed. And in order to do that, you have to know your team really well. The two most predictable things of this whole season was that a young Michigan team was going to struggle against Notre Dame because they don't have a feel for each other yet. Their lines have not played with each other long enough, and they don't have that ability to get to make those extra passes to get through the neutral zone with speed, which is how you defeat the lock. The other thing you could guess is that Michigan's goalie was going to have a ridiculous save percentage against Penn State, because as Brian says, they just come into the neutral zone. And you know, the answer with the Petrillo thing is like, yeah, throw him out there tonight. Because he's a big dude, he's going to stand in goal. They're going to, you know, get four chances on him all night, and we'll see what he's got. But I think that Michigan is exactly what we were hoping they would be. And I take nothing away from the Notre Dame loss weekend, except for Notre Dame got lucky and they played their game. And Michigan did that to a lot of people last year, too, when we were playing the same system. And Penn State is going to Penn State. You're going to play a Penn State against the Penn State game against them. So I really like where they're at. I wish they would cancel the juniors, because I think they're all going to get sick and it's, you know, not going to work out for anybody and no one's watching it.
Yeah. Normally, this would be the moment in the show or the segment where I ask you guys to give me predictions. Since the game is off, I can't do that. So I'll ask you to predict something different. Mm-hmm. Will we come back on next week at this time? Do you think that the Michigan-Ohio State game will have been canceled, or will it be a go, starting with you, Brian Cook?
I think they'll play it, and it'll be a debacle.
Craig Ross?
They'll play it, and it'll be a debacle.
Seth?
If they don't have enough guys to play this week, no one's going to be out of the 21-day window next week either. So they're not going to play it, and it will still be a debacle.
Yeah, I think the contact tracing is contributing to the lower number. So they could be through that. Mm. I think that they would, you know, they play that game. They are going to be down some. I think they're going to be down some starters.
Down 9 starters this week. I mean, from what they looked at the beginning of the season, by my count, I think 8 or 9 guys that they counted on starting didn't play against Penn State. So
I think they would be down some starters. We'll see. We'll see how it goes, though, guys. As always, appreciate you.
Down the field. charging to match will not yield. And when the blue and silver wave, stand and cheer the brave. Rah, 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 go hard, win the game. With honor you will keep your fame. Down the field and gain the Lions' victory. Go!